Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Watch your back, son. I'm Luke. I'm Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation Voyager. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Hey, buddy. You were back in Seattle.
I was, and mistakes were made.
For the first time since you moved.
I did a bad job, Ben.
You mean by moving right before a global pandemic? Or?
Well, yeah. I mean, that, obviously.
That was a huge mistake on your part. What an idiot you were.
That was pretty dumb by me. You ever, like, skip a meal, either because you're working or reasons? Mm-hmm. And then when it's time, you overindulge. I'm someone who does this. Like, if I'm really feeling it and it's been a while, and it could be anything, really.
Sure.
I'll just really go for it when it's time to go again.
I used to make this mistake on Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. I would say like, I'm going to skip lunch today so I can really go after it at dinner time.
Yeah.
And that's a mistake.
And the thing about Thanksgiving is, for most people, it's once a year. If you've got a family dynamic where you're doing multiple Thanksgivings, I understand that can be a couple times a year thing. But like, no technology I've ever deployed has ever worked in Thanksgiving or anything else, because this Seattle trip was 10 days. I was hammered for, I think, 9 out of the 10 evenings. And on the 10th, it was just because circumstances prevented it. I probably would have done it again.
Uh-huh. If you can remember Adam's trip to Seattle, you weren't really there.
It was, and I'm not trying to paint this in a negative light, and I don't need anyone concerned about me. What it came from, the motivation was just the happy feelings of being reunited with people.
Yeah.
And it being quite a celebration for that reason. So
that's great, man.
It was just, normally the multi-day celebration for me is a couple of days. This one was unique in its length.
This was a marathon.
Yeah, it really was. But man, I'm really feeling it. I've decided on embarking on a week of clean living this week.
Wow. We are going to lay down two episodes this afternoon, and there is a non-zero chance that we hit that Warnhammer, and that could really be bad for you.
I was thinking a lot about that. On the one hand, I'm really hoping for a good lucky feeling. Uh-huh, that we don't get there. On the other hand, my body's never been more ready for something like that.
You've been cross-training.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I spent a whole week in the drinking gym. I'm good to go.
Yeah, you're looking pretty swole.
Yeah, not in the way that you want.
And by swole, I mean puffy.
Yeah, just around the face mostly. Yeah, man. Thanks for minding the store while I was away. I really tried to unplug all the way, in a way that is pretty hard for either of us when we take time off from the show. So it was nice to be able to do that.
When you are a small business owner, it can really feel downright impossible to check out entirely. And I think very often about how lucky I feel to have such a competent partner in you. If I need to check out for a week, you can totally hold me down and vice versa. We, I mean, I can't totally hold you down, but I could do a lot.
No, I'm very wriggly. Yeah, it's a good deal for both of us. I appreciate that. Ben, yeah. I got a question for you because I hung out with a lot of family on this trip. And I know sure. recently you've been hanging out with your family quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I haven't been out in the wild very much. I've been a shut-in like you have
yeah.
the whole year. And so I'm unused to being around, you know, strangers mostly, but family also.
Right.
And I found it particularly challenging. I mean, for all the obvious reasons. But also, yeah. like, how to moderate your personality and sense of humor for civilians is something that right. I had not had a lot of recent reps in.
You and I are like two of the only people we've seen recently, and famously, we're always doing bits
yeah.
when we see each other.
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
So that might be a mode that we are both kind of locked in.
Yeah, I had to really work to dial that back because someone's casually throwing the wiffle ball around the room conversationally, and I'm uh-huh. grabbing it and like running it into the yard. No one wants that.
Declaring a touchdown, yeah. and they're like, Adam, we were just playing wiffle ball.
Yeah.
We were just having a game of catch.
My wife is crying. She doesn't think you were joking.
Yeah, I'm definitely feeling a bit of that, and I'm guessing that this is just going to take a couple of reps.
Yeah.
A couple of go-outs with a work friend of my wife's or whatever.
Yeah. The reps are the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's like you and I have been doing nothing but sparring with each other.
Yeah.
And then we like actually have a fight against someone else and we're like getting knocked out in the first round.
Yeah, we're like those guys that pick a fight with Nicolas Cage at the beginning of Con Air.
Right.
We didn't realize that was a trained killer.
Yeah, man.
This is embarrassing to bring up, but I feel like it kind of
this is the place
is orthogonal to what we're talking about.
Uh-huh.
And this is an embarrassment-based podcast.
It is.
I did this very thing. We had a couple of friends of my wife's over and a couple of their friends. So some folks I didn't know sitting around the folding table in our shitty backyard sharing a bottle of wine. And my wife took umbrage with me making an attempt at a bon mot.
Mm.
You know, I dabbled in some wordplay or something and got the wifely, who do you think that's for?
Is
or something like that.
Is it because you were calling it that?
And I got defensive. I'm not proud of the fact that I got defensive, but I said, well, I am a professional comedian.
Oof.
And like, I think that on one level, that is true. Like, you and I make our living making jokes on the internet, but we're not stand-ups, we're not improv comics, we're not comedic actors.
Right.
And it just, I think it, because I was defensive, I didn't say I'm a professional podcaster, because that's the dorkiest thing you can fall back on in the history of the world.
Right.
But boy, that really raised some eyebrows around the table.
I love it. I love it because I don't think you're wrong in defending yourself and in defending the, I don't know, man.
Can we think of ourselves in that way? I don't think we can, really. I mean, that's an insult to comedians, but can we?
I think in mixed company, it's so difficult to define what we are because yeah. we rarely ever have to do that in the company we usually keep, either with each other or other professionals who do the same stuff that we do.
Yeah, Chuck Bryant doesn't need to be brought up to speed on what it is we do.
This came up orthogonally with me also. In that, like, there was some playful ribbing going on in the family about, like, how, you know, must be nice. I just make dick jokes with my friends while my wife does the real work.
Right.
And you can't defend yourself with as much enthusiasm as maybe is warranted at a moment like this. Because it's ugly, right?
Yeah.
It's ugly
yeah.
to make the case for your professional existence. And so I so rarely do it or am interested in doing it. Instead, I just get cucked.
Yeah, yeah. Instead, Adam, you just get twisted.
I do. Yeah, twisted right up. Twisted them right off of me.
Just like the Starship Voyager in today's episode, season 2, episode 6. Twisted.
Revert course.
Unless you've got something a little bigger in your torpedo tubes, I'm not turning around.
We begin with Kes entering a darkened Sundreen's, a place I don't think she's ever been. And if she has, just very, very, oh, by the way, like as Neelix's date or whatever. Like she's not doing holodeck with the same enthusiasm as the others.
She hasn't stood up in a closet with a sailor in Sundreen's before.
Right. Yeah. I mean, but that would really be the place, right? Sundreen's full of sailors.
Full of sailors, probably full of closets, you know, those old bars, they have little snugs and stuff.
I mean, where are you going to stick the mop when you're not using it?
I read something very interesting about this episode that actually kind of unlocked something I think you and I have both been making the case for in season 2.
Mm-hmm.
This episode was one of 4 that was written and produced at the end of the first season.
Wow.
And they were held back by the United Paramount Network to air in the second season. And the other episodes that are included in that are Projections, Elogium, and the 37s. All episodes that I think we talked about feeling more appropriate as season 1 episodes.
You know, say what you will about the United Paramount Network, RSVP. Mm-hmm. They always made great business moves. Money moves, I think is what they called them. And
they don't dance no more.
The decision with these episodes, no different, really.
Very strange, right? Like, yeah. I think that our instincts were better than the executives at the networks. These are season 1 episodes.
Wow. You know, we don't like to get into the unsavory aspects of podcasting, which often include the hosts of a show saying they could do it better. But here we are, Ben.
Here we are. One little addendum to that piece of trivia. This one was the last of those 4 to air due to the fact that the production team considered this episode to be the worst of the 4.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you ready to test that assumption?
The people involved with this episode thought it was garbage. Some of them didn't think it should ever have been aired.
Wow.
I think B-Dunks was one of them, which is my nickname for Robert Duncan McNeil.
B-Dunks?
Yeah. I mean, we don't know each other at all. Certainly not at the level that would warrant a nickname. But yeah, B-Dunks hated this one.
He seems like a fun guy who would be up for a cool nickname. Like
Yeah.
Yeah, Sundreen's is empty and the lights flick on and Kes finds herself in a surprise party.
I hate surprise parties. I would never do that to you.
This is something she, unlike Lieutenant Worf, has no context for. She wasn't suspicious at all.
I love surprise parties.
I mean, when I look at Neelix, I don't suspect a Susie Green situation where where he's trying to do this for any untoward reason.
What's your angle, you sideburned fuck?
Robert Picardo really pulls off that beret. You know how some people just have beret face? I think you have beret face. I do not.
Yeah, I can rock a beret.
Robert Picardo, great beret face.
Great beret face.
I feel like B-Dunks, probably, not a great beret face.
The thumbnail for this episode was Robert Picardo in a beret and the puffy shirt that he's wearing as the bartender in Sundreen's. Mm-hmm. And I did let out an audible when I sat down to watch this episode, because I was really worried that we were going to be stuck in the fucking holodeck with him the entire time.
Yeah, this is audible groan the episode, isn't it?
Yeah, so the doc is here bartending. It's Kes's second birthday. Big number 2 for Kes, and apparently that's drinking age if you're an Ocampa.
Yeah, the terrible 2's apparent. Because she is screaming and just won't stop. Because the teeth have come in, I guess.
Yeah, she's toothing on a little mug of mulled brandy or something.
Yeah, very painful on Neelix's nipples.
Up on the bridge, Ensign Kim would really like to get to the party. You know, groundwork must be laid for whether it's the Delaney sisters or whoever he's going to get after. And completing his entire shift is just eating into time that could be devoted to that.
He really is Benjamin R. Harrison, teacher's pet in this moment to Tuvok. And to Tuvok's credit, he kind of gets it.
I presume this notable impatience is duty or desire to attend the festivities in Holodeck 2.
He gets what's happening. He doesn't want to go to this fucking party. He'll tell you that much, but he understands Kim's interest in doing so.
Yeah, Tuvok has daimo, which is delight in missing out.
Yeah. That's going to be my next 2 weeks, man. I'm not going anywhere.
He kind of he's happy to help Ensign Kim. He gives Ensign Kim a job, which is go check on something around the holodeck, and when you're done, you can knock off. And Kim has nearly stepped off the bridge when they come across some kind of an anomaly in space.
I feel like there should be a name for this, right? When you're at a job and you get sent to do a task that is actually kind of a reward. You ever have to do this? Like when I worked retail, the best job in the world was, oh, we're out of a thing we need to run the business. Like maybe you should leave and go buy that thing somewhere else. And that was the best.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was a production assistant on commercials and stuff, occasionally you'd get called by the production and say, hey, we need you to like do a return tomorrow morning.
Oh, yeah.
It, you know, it meant you had to get up at 6 a.m. and go pick up a van at a bonded parking lot and drop it off somewhere.
Yeah.
But they'd give you like a full day rate for like literally taking the van across town so that nobody else had to do it.
That's the best. It's so weird how you recalibrate the spell that work puts on you when the work you're tasked with is just a little bit different. Like it's still, you're still doing something you wouldn't ordinarily be doing, but it's just different.
Yeah, it's a little, the variety makes it taste a little nicer.
Poor Kim isn't even able to step into the turbo lift before a Star Trek episode happens. It's detected dead ahead.
Mm-hmm.
It's glowing gases growing ever closer.
This did seem like something you might want to not include in season one, because it's just like, oh, a nebula that's going to fuck up the holodeck? Yeah, we've had like five of those so far in season one.
Right.
Down in Sandrine's, the captain gets a radio from Tuvok where he says, Captain, we have encountered an unusual...
And then, like, through the wall of Sandrine's, this, like, gold tank busts through. And everyone, for some reason, is playing a pickup basketball game with very short hoops.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, everyone is there. Like, Mystical is there.
Oh, man. You cannot have a pickup basketball game and a music video without Mystical.
You cannot. So, something is wrong with the radio. Party has to cut short.
It really busts Neelix's nuts because he's gone through the work of making the 7-layer birthday cake with that glossy
and, like,
frosting.
Tom Paris just got to like roll out this huge unveiling of a gold locket for Kes, and Neelix is already kind of on his heel because he didn't get her a gift. He just baked her a cake, and then they don't even get to cut into this cake.
I want to just make some space around this comment because it's going to be pretty good.
Okay.
It's going to be pretty significant.
Okay. Here comes a significant comment from Adam Pranica.
I actually side with Neelix on this one. And here's why. It's not that it's a gift of any kind. It's not even that it's jewelry. It's that it's a locket.
Yeah,
and I think
that's a pretty intimate gift.
It would be intimate if it were pictures of yourself in the locket. I just think it's fucking weird that it's an empty locket. I think you should probably, if you're going to give a work friend a locket, you should at least put pictures in the locket. And those pictures should be not of yourself, but of like the person you're giving it to and their special friend or whatever.
Yeah, of the inter-staff fraternization policy from the employee manual, just in miniature inside the locket.
Per Chakotay's new anti-fraternization rules on the ship, you're only allowed to put pictures of Chakotay in that locket.
It's Chakotay on one side and his spirit animal on the other side. It's a weird gift. I would feel very strange if a gentleman gave my wife a locket at a party. I'd be like, what's this about?
Here's the thing. I am definitely giving your wife a locket with pictures of Chakotay inside.
God fucking damn it.
And then I will finally be the recipient of, you really think that's funny? Who is that for? Yeah.
And it'll be cool for me because I'll get to explain it to her later.
It's a gift for both of you.
Yeah, yeah. They have to split from the party. They head out to head back up to the bridge. The communications issues are happening in the bridge also. So Tuvok sends Mr. Kim down. He says, like, you know, run down, see if you can find the captain in person and let her know what's going on. And so Kim leaves the bridge. And they don't run into each other. Who he runs into is a lieutenant named Baxter.
I've been trying to report a problem in the gym, but the comm system seems to be down.
Yeah, and we recognize this guy from his time in the Six Bay. He's known as the ship's jock. Remember him?
Yeah, yeah. I was suspicious of Baxter the second he started talking to Kim because he's like, yeah, man, I was like fucking thrashing myself in the gym. I was working out so hard. And then suddenly, like, the temperature controls went crazy. So I was, like, running up to the bridge to see what was up. And I want to know exactly what form this workout took, because it seems like he must have showered and changed before reporting the problem. He's got, like, a Scotty carrying his injured nephew to the Six Bay via the bridge kind of urgency around this issue.
I have just as many questions as you do about Mr. Baxter.
I mean, like, this seemed so weird that I was like, okay, Mr. Baxter is being set up as like the alien presence that has inhabited a character.
Also thought that. Yeah. Baxter definitely embodies that quality of people who are very enthusiastic about their fitness often have, which is they want to tell you all about it.
Right. How are you going to find out that Baxter started CrossFit?
Yeah.
Don't worry, he'll tell you.
Yeah, you see Baxter in the background of some scenes, like, rolling a giant tire through the corridor.
But he, like, comes back a few times throughout this episode. He felt like the most famous person that shows up in Act 1 of an episode of Law & Order SVU. You're like, this is the fucking killer, you know?
It's interesting, the visual language tells us this, too, but the visual language for him is a lie. Like... like the angle on
totally
William Baxter
threw me off the scent.
The angle on Walter Baxter is this is a man of going concern.
Yeah,
got to keep an eye on him.
Yeah,
and
totally.
And it's such a tease. Also, I'm throwing no shade at the actor who plays Walter Baxter, but he just must be a leg day guy because they always shoot him from the waist up. I'm not getting a significant like gym rat read on him.
Yeah, maybe he's an all cardio guy.
Yeah, I could see that.
I'm an all cardio guy. I burn a lot of calories every day, but I don't look it.
Baxter is an elliptical man. You just take the vowels out, and all of a sudden, it's a millennial gym.
Yeah,
elliptical man.
Yeah,
this conversation goes on and on.
Yeah.
Much like our conversation about Walter Baxter, I was like, what is the point of this? And then when it ends, he's kind of like, so should I keep working out or should I go to work or something? And Kim has to tell him, no, man, like you should go to work.
Yeah.
What is Walter Baxter's deal asking Ensign Kim for advice about what he should do?
Because like Kim is a bridge officer.
He's got that cachet.
He's got that cachet. And I guess he's like... kind of like a department head.
Yeah.
So does that kind of put him in charge in a way that a lieutenant would have to?
I wonder if the vibe is like, you know, you run into the person in the office who isn't in management, like isn't the CEO, but this person is the admin to that to that person. And so you do kind of stiffen up around them as if they carry some of that weight.
Lieutenant Baxter is a dude that knows that nothing perpinks like perpinquity. Harry Kim has the ear of the captain.
Right. You're exactly.
Baxter doesn't get invited to McLaughlin groups.
No.
Issue one.
Harry Kim does.
I think we figured it out.
Yeah.
In the turbo lift, Janeway, Paris, and Chakotay are en route to the bridge, but when they walk through the door, they're on a different deck than they expected to be, and they chalk it up to this comlink issue from before.
No, I think they chocolate it up. Yeah. I think you were right the first time.
They Chakotay.
They close the door and open it again, and they're still on deck four.
Right.
Very confusing. We start to realize that the ship is all effed up because we're just kind of cutting around to different groups. Neelix and Kes walking together, trying to get her back to her quarters after all of the important people on the show had to run off to the bridge, and they are lost.
It's interesting that we've seen this before, but it hit so differently this time. Like, who is the name of that, the gassy asshole that wanted to watch people fuck in TNG? Nagilim. Nagilim.
Gassy asshole who wanted to watch people fuck.
You remember when they run into the other Enterprise out there and they beam over and it's like this, it's like Hall of Mirror style,
yeah.
Big D. And the feeling was so spooky. Like scary spooky. I never get any spook vibes from this, and there should be, right?
I think it's interesting because it's like not... Like, I think that they beam over to that other galaxy class in Nagilum's hole, wondering what the F.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys aren't wondering what the F. Like, it is slowly dawning on them that something is strange, you know?
Yeah.
BLT marches into the galley and starts shouting engineering commands, and everybody's like, ma'am, this is a Wendy's.
Yeah. We do a lot of cross-cutting around the episode, just experiencing this moment through the eyes of our bridge crew.
Yeah.
Neelix and Kes can't find their way home, and it's not because they're drunk after this party.
BLT can't find her way to engineering. The captain, Chakotay, and Lieutenant Paris can't find their way to the bridge. The only person that can really find their way where they're headed is Ensign Kim, who has like been sent down to find the captain. He made a beeline for the holodeck and makes it right there. It's no problem for Ensign Kim.
I love how Baxter has also become lost. And then he's found in the transporter room by BLT. Baxter, who's just sheltered in place in the transporter room, he's decided that's where he's staying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess this is where I live now, the transporter room.
If it was good enough for O'Brien, it's good enough for me.
He really pulled an O'Brien there.
Yeah.
I wondered about that. Like, why does Kim have no problem? But I guess it's that, like, the leading edge of the ship is what's getting distorted or something like that.
This is what's so dicey about creating the rules of an episode this way. You start to ascribe suspicious actions to a character where no suspicion should be. Like, I started to think that something was up with Kim too, but no, he's just luckier than the rest in finding his way to where he wants to go.
Yeah, and the doctor is the only one still there. The doctor hasn't been able to transfer back to Six Bay, and Kim is trying to say, like, okay, little hologram, I'm off to find the captain. And the doctor's like, hey, don't you think it would be good to have a chief medical officer in the Six Bay in case people start to get hurt with whatever is going on, which seems very strange? And Kim is like, wow, actually, that is kind of a great point. Well, I guess I'll have to divert all my attention to that and not to finding the captain and alerting her to the problem.
The doc really takes a swing for Kim's dick for being in a refractory state with Sandrine. Like, I thought he was hyper aggressive about proving his point here.
Yeah. Yeah. The doc is not taking no for an answer.
Never get into an importance measuring contest with a doctor. You're going to lose every time.
Going to lose every.
Moms can't live with them. Can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it going to be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, And it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one, an Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use. And I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it. And I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work. Some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean. With Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leader in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Goddamn time.
I've got to get that
platinum.
Get that
old enlargement.
I've got to get that
platinum.
What not?
Are you planning a heist?
Gold.
So pretty soon, they've all kind of found their way back to Sandrine's, and we have to have a McLaughlin group.
Issue two.
Here in the bar. And they're talking about this nebula. It has become a distortion ring. Distortion ring kind of magically becomes the name of this, it seems to me. I don't really remember when it was described as a ring, and it didn't look like a ring to me on the view screen, but they've all agreed that it's a ring. It's like, okay, I guess it's a ring.
Indeed. I'm enjoying your repetition of it as much as I did in the episode itself.
It's kind of the exocomp of the episode, yeah. Right? Like what? Where did... Like, I just, like, I would have accepted it if I'd heard somebody say, it's actually ring-shaped, you know?
I like the idea of, like, well, the gang's all here at the holodeck. We might as well have a meeting there. We got nowhere else to go.
Yeah, and they, like, push all the little cafe tables together to make a conference table.
Yeah. The doc has a pretty interesting idea here. Everyone's like, you know, that thing outside... It's making our ship turn into one of those labyrinths made out of topiaries.
Oh, isn't it beautiful? Yeah.
And the doc is like, you know, as a medical professional, I gotta just throw out there that it may not be the ship that's changing, but your mind.
They may be hallucinating. Mm-hmm. This may be like electromagnetic radiation that is acting on their optic nerve cells, that they're disoriented in some way.
Music really does a lot to set the tone in moments like these, and the music really takes a step back here, because as soon as the idea of mental faculties being compromised is dropped in the room, there is not that chord of... the crazy chord you get in episodes of science fiction shows where yeah. the crew is about to lose their minds.
Yeah, like a lot of flanging, high frequency stringed instruments suddenly don't go crazy.
I just hope when I reach advanced age, I don't start to hear the flanging.
Yeah, that'd be pretty troubling.
I hope we solve for the flanging by the time that day comes.
There is a lot of horror movie math at play here, though, mm-hmm. right? Because it's like, let's split up and try a bunch of different strategies for getting back to the bridge, because that's what we want to do. Mm-hmm. And so if they decided to go with a more horror movie tone with the music, I feel like this would have felt super risky. Like, yeah. oh, fuck, like they're all going to be like alone in these hallways or, and like Baxter is going to start like stabbing people or something.
There is big, big fun to be had expression-wise in this scene when they start divvying up the crew, particularly between Ethan Phillips and Robert Beltran, because the shot reverse shot of Neelix going, I'm going to go with Chakotay. That's how it should be. And Chakotay's like the kid who would rather not work in the group project, who would rather just write his own paper or whatever, is not game.
We've really taken batting practice on the character of Chakotay. This moment, just the facial expression he makes in this moment when the captain asks him if he's okay with Neelix tagging along, he's redeemed himself entirely. He's my favorite character on the show now.
I really wish I could do this with my face instead of the thing I usually do with my face when I'm displeased. Like the thing that Beltran does with his pursed lips and like kind of briefly widening eyes is like funny and endearing, where the face that I make when I'm displeased is what makes people angry at me.
Neelix is not a card player. I don't think he reads Chakotay in this moment.
In the next scene, we cut to Paris going to engineering with BLT. And when they arrive, BLT goes absolutely Robert Stack from Airplane on every person she sees, like giving out orders, pointing things out, telling them they're staying late to work. It's amazing.
Yeah. It was like to fall in the mud and get kicked in the head by an iron boot.
It's fucking great. Even if your shift is over, you don't get to leave. And so what they're going to work on is rigging up a site-to-site transport to beam themselves to the bridge. And there's a great moment of levity in this scene where she goes to a little side room in engineering and opens the door. And the door opens on a hunky crewman's quarters. And he's like in his boxer briefs, presumably either about to get in the shower or just out of the shower. I mean, this is the guy that they should have cast as dude who was working out.
This is one of those moments in the episode that is so twisted. In an episode that gives Robert Beltran and Ethan Phillips so much facial fun, mm-hmm. they give the guy in the boxer briefs nothing to work with. Like, he's in there like he's not seeing BLT for some reason.
It's weird when they don't want to pay an extra to have one fucking line.
Yeah.
Could they not have had him go like, ah? Or, like, does that count as a line? Like, what does the union say about whether that's a line?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I would like to be on the panel that rules on matters like that.
Did he go, ah? Or did he go, ah? Because there's more than one syllable.
And what's weird is, like, he's not in a state of nature that would inspire the embarrassment that we get from BLT afterwards. BLT is acting like she saw this guy's hog, when in reality...
What if this was the one example of nudity in Star Trek and he was just hanging dong, like he was just standing nude in his quarters?
Yeah.
She did that thing where she's like, oh, sorry, and then, like, takes one last look before she pushes the button to close the door.
With the way that BLT is winging jobs around the room previously, I really expected her to pull this guy into engineering where he'd have to work the rest of his shift wearing a wet towel.
Yeah, totally. Get in here. We need you. Chakotay and Neelix are walking around together, and they are doing the walk around with tricorders and kind of get a sense of the shape of things on the ship.
Yeah.
Part of the strategy. But they are also having a conversation about Neelix's jealous relationship with his special 2-year-old lady friend.
Another great face take here for Beltran, like a great face episode for him, for real, because when Neelix asks him if he is a great stick man,
yeah,
Chakotay can't help but make the face. The face of a man that may or may not be a great stick man.
Relative to you, Neelix, I guess you could say I am.
Yeah. It's big fun. He grows more irritated with the line of questioning here, but manages, I think, to dispense some fairly good advice about jealousy and how a person can combat that kind of feeling in their relationship.
Do you have any idea what's going on here?
Not exactly.
I thought this was fairly well written.
I did too. I think it's interesting to like think of Chakotay as somebody who has lived a ton of life, because we don't get much backstory on him, or at least we haven't yet. They've sort of treated his quote unquote Native American-ness as all the backstory he needs, I guess, and his maqueesness.
Mm-hmm.
But like, we don't know if he has a special person back home or what. And this kind of implies more depth to his character than we've gotten so far. And I hope that they continue with that.
What if the reveal is that he just fucks his animal guide and that's his secret shame? Like, that's why he wanted to get in that shuttlecraft and go far away.
My animal guide is actually just my left hand.
My animal guide is a furry.
So they run into Lieutenant Baxter, another instance where I was like, okay, well, Baxter definitely has something to do with this. We've now seen him 3 times.
Uh-huh. They really stomp on Baxter's balls when they leave. Did you notice that Chakotay walks away from him mid-statement?
Yeah, yeah. Not a lot of love lost between Chakotay and Baxter.
Yeah.
I think Baxter gets told to like head back to the mess hall and like tell everyone to hunker down there.
Yeah.
For the duration.
Yeah, maybe
do none of the other people on this ship can help us right now, so just hang tight.
Maybe do some dips on a dining table in there or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They run into Tuvok, and this is an interesting scene because like we hear that like he's left Lieutenant Ayala in command, who I don't think we know.
He is clearly freaking out about this decision, though, like in a kind of emotional break for the stoic Vulcan Tuvok. He has some regrets.
I thought
about,
I was going to be away for like 120 seconds and that would be all Ayala would have to grapple with from a command standpoint. But I've been gone kind of a long time right now. And like, it's Lieutenant Ayala we're talking about.
I mean, it might as well be Geordi up there running the show, ready to separate the ship.
Yeah, so they're talking about this and they're like, all right, let's redouble our efforts to find the bridge. And Neelix has wandered off and he gone.
In another moment that with music you might think is scary, but is just like almost neutral in feeling. They're not exactly worried, but they're not exactly not worried either.
Yeah, well, I mean, like Chakotay turns to Tuvok and is like, do you think we're rid of him? Are we, like, this is kind of nice, actually.
Yeah.
And Tuvok is like, this is pretty great.
Yeah, I mean, we really go from, like, the euphoric high of losing a Neelix hanger-on to the epic low of having to navigate the Jeffries tubes for hours on your hands and knees with Captain Janeway and Kim. And what they're doing is a lot like what everyone else is. They've got the tricorders on. They're trying to drop digital breadcrumbs around. They keep picking up this weird energy reading that appears and disappears. And this was maybe the most scary moment in the entire episode, because when your captain kind of pre-eulogizes you in a moment where there is no danger at all.
You've been one of the bright spots of this whole mission.
And you are Ensign Kim.
Right.
This would scare the shit out of me. I would start shaking if I were Kim in this moment.
Yeah.
This is really bad for him.
Captain has some very nice things to say about him, but in a way that really does feel like, hey, this might be the last chance I have to say something like this to you.
Yeah.
And then she opens a door in the Jeffries tube and pops through and finds that her arm goes all rubbery on the other side, like that rubber pencil trick.
Coffee.
It's a portal to a room full of nothing but Bezier curve tools.
Yeah. The most, great trick.
The most difficult tool for me to use, a tool I've never learned how to use well.
Mm-hmm. At least you know how to pronounce it. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's all I can do. Cable Crew's take here is more terrified than painful, and I thought that was an interesting choice.
Yeah, like that it was just that she was stuck and couldn't get back.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that she goes from terror to pain, because once she's pulled back into the Jeffries tube by Kim, she's like, oh, that was pretty scary stuff. And then she like doubles over in pain. So she kind of gives two different takes on the same situation. And that part I thought was really effective, like rather than doing the same kind of react two times in a row.
And then she passes out.
Coffee black.
Make it yourself.
I'm trying to help you see this as an opportunity to grow.
Make it yourself.
This is when we cut back down to Sandrine's, where the doctor is getting pulled in two different directions. You know, Sandrine wants to fuck him. He doesn't want to fuck her. He doesn't want to play pool with the pool shark guy. Sandrine has to resort to firing him from his bartending gig, which is a huge relief to the doc.
I will find a new bartender.
I really wish you would.
And enter Kim with Captain Janeway, who is unconscious.
Yeah. And I think Kes has made it back at this point. Yeah. So the doc has something to do, but he has no tools to do it with.
I felt like a supernatural need to push everyone to the holodeck in a way that ended up being totally coincidental.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like the ring wanted them in the holodeck for some specific reason, but they just managed to find themselves there as a location.
It seems like they just keep that's the one place that you can reliably find on the ship.
Yeah.
Where all the other places are, it's like a maze to get anywhere else. But the second you want to go to the holodeck, that's pretty easy.
Right, right.
We get a little debate between Tuvok and Chakotay about like how to solve this labyrinth. And Tuvok is using like conventional labyrinth solving logic.
It would appear that we're in a labyrinth.
Which Chakotay doesn't really see as being the right choice here.
There's a flaw in your logic.
He doesn't think that the layout of the ship has just been changed to one new thing. He thinks that it's like going through permutations or something. And he actually proves this to Tuvok by calling his bluff. And he says, let's split up. Let's go our separate ways. And they come around a corner and find each other almost immediately.
The years 2016 to 2020 prove that you cannot solve chaos with a systematic approach.
So they find themselves back in the bar, as do BLT and Paris, who have attempted their site-to-site transport and wind up beaming onto the pool table in Sandrine's. So everybody's back, baby.
Old Stickman takes great umbrage with this.
Gaunt Gary, he is credited as.
That's a real garbage pail kid name right there. Really, what is that about?
Yeah, where's the trading card with Gaunt Gary on it?
Everyone is very concerned about the captain being downed. And also Neelix is missing, but like,
Nobody's concerned about that.
Let's just focus on the top line problem right now.
So they're like, well, listen, we've all been walking around with tricorders now. So we've got a lot of spatial data about the ship. Why don't we put them all together, see what the computer spits back at us. And we get a wireframe graphic of the ship being kind of bent in all different directions. It didn't really seem contorted enough.
It kind of dissolves into a wireframe of that man that BLT saw stepping out of a shower. And then the wireframe kind of turns into a very detailed image of him, like drying himself off.
They all kind of turn and look at her, and she's like, well, I was scanning a different thing.
Speaking of twisted. And out of nowhere, like, look, the picture of the ship on the computer screen is fucked. It is bad. But what they're describing and what they're seeing is totally incongruent, because the maze that the crew has been stuck in has been a ship-shaped maze.
Yeah.
When what they're seeing on the screen is like a ship that has been smashed into a rock. Like,
right. It looks like when you stomp a soda can after finishing it, kind of level of crushedness.
And I understand why they can't have constructed twisted bulkheads and, you know, floppy floors, and all the effects having to do with the ring are Bezier curve effects.
Right.
But if that's the case, give me a different look in the wireframe. Like, don't sell me on the twisted soda can when that's not what we've been living with for the past 40 minutes of the episode.
I think that's a total art mistake, and what it should have been is like the ship is made out of Legos, and the pieces are constantly going through permutations of what order they're in or something like that.
Yeah, if it's more Tetris-like, I think it could make more logical sense.
Yeah. So they've got kind of two options that they start to discuss, and it's like either find a way to like get to the navigational controls and see if we can fly out of this distortion ring, or this like thing with the warp core that they all agree could be like pretty dangerous if BLT doesn't get the math just right. But it's a technobabble solution that is like bringing the ship right up to the edge of exploding without exploding it. And this kind of turns into a power struggle between Tuvok and Chakotay. Like, we almost go Crimson Tide in this moment.
You ever watch Star Trek?
What's interesting about Tuvok's argument is that it comes less from him believing his argument is right and more about his status with Janeway. He's like, you know, Janeway would usually take my course of action.
She often agrees with me.
Right.
And Chakotay really has to repudiate this forcefully in a way that I found very interesting. I feel like he hasn't been asked to do that. He hasn't been asked to pull rank like that many times.
Yeah. It's,
you would have thought that would have been a thing that, like, this is another thing that feels like a season one thing, like have Chakotay have to assert his position in the hierarchy a few times with some of the Starfleets, because they might not accept his position naturally.
The pacing of this episode is so unusual because you get so many moments of conversation and argument among crew people. And then after this moment, you cut directly to engineering mid-solution.
And it, like, it seems so fucking dangerous when we cut to engineering. Like, it's Kim and BLT like screaming at each other. Yeah. And they're like, we're going to have to run like hell to get out of the way of this thing once it goes.
47, 48, 49. Let's move.
What's scary is seeing people run real life fast down a corridor. You never see that in Star Trek.
They really don't. And so they set it to go. They sprint. They like duck for cover around a corner. The thing goes banger everywhere, but it didn't work. It didn't do anything.
Yeah. And instead of it working, things really got worse. This ring warping is happening right outside their door.
Our course is locked in.
Do it.
Listen to me very carefully, because I'm only going to say this once.
Do it.
So if we get this moment where it's like, is this where it all ends? It kind of feels like the baryon sweep is going to like find them in the end of the ship. And the end of the ship is Sandrine's bar. And Tuvok kind of argues for, hey, like, we have tried everything that we could think of. None of the things worked. Like, we can't do the navigational array thing anymore because it's inaccessible to us. So I think we just have to let this wash over us and hope it doesn't kill us.
Are you suggesting we just let it crush us?
Precisely.
I feel like this scene could have used a Baxter. And here's why. Everyone's way of confronting their mortality here seems very similar, or at least related. Like, I know they're sort of doing things in a different way that's in keeping with their own values or whatever. But what we need is someone to freak out, and no one does. And I feel like Baxter would have been a great instrument for that way of being, because there's something just a little unbelievable about living in an entire minute of an episode where everyone's just like, all right, this is it. Never thought it would go this way, but all eight of us are very chill in this moment.
Hey, like, I know I never said this to you, but working with you really meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
And if Baxter was, like, doing panic push-ups in the corner, like, gotta leave a beautiful corpse!
Right, right.
It would have felt a little bit more real.
Yeah. It's very neat in a way that I think cuts against what could be an extremely stressful moment in the episode, the climax of it.
I thought the special effect was really cool.
Yeah.
Which is like you're seeing it kind of start to warp them in rows as it washes over different members of the crew. They get more and more warped. And they really let this moment linger. It's a very intense and long moment.
I think one of the aspects of the moment that was weird was how supernatural it all felt. In especially Tuvok and Paris's reads before the wave finally hits them, they almost seem hypnotized or possessed by the moment. And I just would hope that with characters we're growing to know that we would, you know, at their ultimate moment of truth, like we'd know them best in that final moment. And they became even more inscrutable at the end in a way that felt like a missed opportunity, you know, like drop the veil.
Honey, let me ask you a question. Do you know where the warranty card is on the
TiVo? No, I don't. In case something happens to me, really
is it in the kitchen drawer by any chance?
And let me know you utterly when you're about to die. And instead, it's like the feeling of it felt very, very numbed.
The one thing that made me feel very confident that nothing that bad was going to happen was that the captain is like every time they talk to her, she's just like babbling nonsense.
He's talking to me.
And it's like, I know that there are many more seasons and episodes of this show, but the way you make me feel like this is potentially a mortal moment for all of these characters is not by having the captain have checked out of the episode 15 minutes ago. Like, if she was here saying, like, these are our last moments together, that's where all of the impact would have come from.
That is so right. I'm thinking of all the movies and TV shows of, you know, like the moment where the submarine's going below crush depth. And you see the captain, you know, it's the captain's stoicism that informs the crew's stoicism in that moment. And you're totally right. The absence of the captain makes the crew stoicism here feel unbelievable.
Right. Or just like the laws of narrative will not allow for this to be the end, because you would have needed the captain to be present for that moment.
It's impossible to know. But do you think you're a struggle to the very last second person or an accept and relax person?
I feel like if I've got distortion wave coming toward me, I would not just stand off in the corner of the bar. I'd be like, listen, like this thing, like there's no way where for us to go. Let's fucking dive head first into it. You know, let's get it over with.
I didn't think there was a third choice there, but that's really it, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's take matters into your own hands. Yeah.
I'm not a patient man.
I'm not going to wait for my entire party before being seated. I'm just going to go head first into the distortion ring.
We're a party of six. I can see a six top right there. I'm going to go. Listen, I know it's your policy. I'm going to go sit down. Tell me I'm wrong.
I can look out the window and see them parking right now.
So they get through it. Everything's okay. They come back to the bridge. The ring is kind of leaving with as little fanfare as it arrived. They find that there's a huge amount of data in the computer, and also that the computer's database has been downloaded by an external source. So this was presumably some kind of alien species or entity that was curious about them and wanted to communicate and was trying to communicate, but just, you know, it was too broad a gulf of types of consciousness.
Most of the data was from Tom Paris's quarters and personal computer. Terabytes upon terabytes of video data.
There's some kind of file that got copied that is labeled BitTorrent. What do you think that is, Tom? Well, Captain, a funny story about that.
Strangely, the largest files were included in a folder, inside another folder, inside a third, and fourth, and fifth, and finally a sixth folder called Tax Documents.
A So they exchange some porno with some aliens, and they get on their merry way. Oh, and Neelix shows up. He still has his cake.
Oh, yeah. You'd think the bridge would be a lids on your beverages, no food environment, but there's the seven layer being put at Paris Station. Looks like a great cake.
It's one thing to bring canapes up onto the bridge.
Are those Valerian canapes?
But an 8-inch thick fucking layer cake just seems like it's going to get crumbs everywhere.
It seems like the kind of cake you need to slice an outer ring from, and then there's like the inner mini cake that you reveal from those outer slices.
Oh yeah.
That you then cut again.
So we don't get any like button on the episode with them cleaning crumb out of the instruments. That's the end. That's it. That's the end of Twisted, Adam. Did you like this episode?
Captain
I was prepared. Like, I often have this feeling, the equal and opposite feeling of like, if everyone really likes a thing and is hyper encouraging of me to see or experience it because it's so amazing, I'll go in a little defensive and not as open maybe to being dazzled. The exact opposite is something that happens as well to me. If something hates a thing, I will be more receptive to its positive qualities. And that's what happened here. I also read that like people who worked on this episode disavowed it.
Yeah.
And I found nothing here that bad. Like it's a clunker of an episode, but it's not nearly the worst of breed in Star Trek, or I would say even of Star Trek Voyager episodes that we've seen up until now.
No, it's not in the bottom three of Star Trek Voyager episodes we've seen by any extent. And I think that you could like knock this episode for like having a strange tone, like missing an opportunity to make it more of a horror film or whatever. But I kind of think that that's an interesting choice. I don't understand the disavowal thing as a response to having worked on this episode.
It might be my experience in production that makes me feel this way, but like when you read that they were 8 minutes short on the ep and that they had to do ADR and that they had to like bulk it up in parts to make it a serviceable episode, I'm more inclined to defend it as a production challenge than revile it as an episode. And I don't know if that's just feeling empathy for a group of people trying to make a creative thing with these sort of challenges involved. Right. Like it sounds like it was a nightmare to make. And when you're in a production nightmare, sometimes the best you can hope for is serviceable. And serviceable in this case does not make it bad. I understand if you were working on it, how you would disavow it because your experience doing so was so terrible, like, but
fuck that. I hope we have more fun on the next one.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
That's where I'm at with it.
Yeah, I feel almost exactly the same way. And I wonder about the holding it back an entire season from air choice and like what that was about. Like, I can understand it if they were like, well, this episode is such dog shit that, you know, we can't have it be one of the last few that people see this season because there's no way they'll come back for season two if they see a turkey like this. Mm-hmm. But it just didn't feel like a turkey to me. Like,
yeah.
It's interesting how, like that experience of having gone through it must have distorted everyone's opinion of it so much that, honestly, like on balance, I think this is an acceptable episode.
You heard it from Greatest Gen. It's fine.
It's fine.
That line should be in the Memory Alpha write-up of this episode. Adam and Ben from Greatest Gen reviewed it as quote unquote fine.
I would love to see our reviews of some things end up on Wikipedia eventually. That would be great.
Especially when they're as hard hitting as fine.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal, actually.
Yeah.
I understand people that hate our podcast. I understand people that love our podcast. People that think our podcast is fine, I'm perplexed by.
Maybe the most confusing of our viewers are the ones that purchase a priority one message, Ben.
True. Excellent pivot, Adam.
For what reason would they do such a thing? Let's go find out.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
But the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
The reason for this first priority one message is of a promotional nature. And it goes like this. Ripped Jeans, book two of MedSci Missions, is available now. That's Jeans spelled G-E-N-E-S. Book one, Earth and Beyond, saw worldwide utopia ended by mysterious aliens. After a bizarre bot occupation and all-out war, humanity is threatened by an alien mutagen that will eventually affect all humans everywhere. Now, mysteries of DNA unwind as scientists venture on a pulse-pounding interplanetary adventure. Comedic relief blends with darker matters as they forge relationships with aliens who might have the answers Earth needs. Wow. So check out medscimissions.wordpress.com for more info about the series and to view the nebulous cover art painted by the author herself. Cool.
I really love the title Ripped Jeans. I think so often with a creative project, like if you can just get a fun title like that.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying the rest of it isn't work, but that's a big amount of work. You get that part of the work done, I think the rest follows nicely. And Ripped Jeans is an example of this. I think it says a lot about the creator when you can come up with a title like that and maybe the tone of the work that follows.
Yeah, these are books that you can buy on Amazon. Another example of an author promoting her work on our show without giving her name out. Her name is Wendy Gamble. Check out Wendy Gamble's work. So head to MedSci Missions. That's M-E-D-S-C-I missions.wordpress.com. Check it out.
Ben, our second priority one message is of a personal nature. It's to you and me and the rest of Uxbridge Shimoda LLC. The message is from Guy. The message goes like this. Your greatest gen ads on Maximum Fun convinced me to finally check out this Star Trek thing I've been hearing about for the past 30 years.
Wow. Wow.
I had a great time watching TNG and DS9 and viewing along with your pod. Thanks, guys. Bonus question. What is your favorite Bill Tilly card? Guy says, mine is 820. She lays waste to Dorn's lightning performance.
That's the Keiko lightning card. I can tell.
Right. Wow. Man. I love a question like this.
Yeah.
There are so many cards out there.
Very hard to pick a favorite. I think maybe one of my favorites is the series he did for the Crimson Tide donor bonus episode, which is a series of cards that if you flip them over on the back, they all have a section of the Crimson Tide poster that Bill made with our faces replacing Denzel Washington and Gene Hackman's faces. And so if you have all the cards and put them together, you can like a puzzle make the poster.
So fun. He's really talented.
Like, such a clever idea.
Yeah.
And those are fun. I think the issue for me is that number 820 is that's like halfway through Deep Space Nine. Bill has made thousands of these things at this point.
It's incredible how much work he's put in and how it's always reliably very funny.
Yeah.
And always like the attention to detail is always there. Like if he's doing diptychs or triptychs, like phaser beams are going from one frame into the other and they're lining up just so. Yeah. And he's getting the perfect frame of a person's expression for maximum comedic effect. It's really hard to pick one, but I know that like whenever he pops a holo card, just the idea that there are holo cards is a delight to me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, our very first holo card was Drunk Shimoda.
Very auspicious.
Yeah.
Adam, our last priority one message is from Dave, and it's to Ben and Adam. It goes like this. It took me over a year, but I caught up to viewing the pod in real time, and I figured I owed you some worthless gold. I'm a terrible procrastinator, so to make sure I don't put this off and forget, quote, I really want to do this here, now. Okay, let's do it. Sorry for the out-of-date jokes. Thanks for the laughs. I look forward to watching Voy with you.
Couple of great messages here from friends of DeSoto. Hope, Dave, you stuck with us going into Voyager.
Yeah.
Thanks for the support from everyone who purchases a Priority One message.
Head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Get on that.
You know, I'm really easy to get along with most of the time. But I don't like bullies. I don't like threats. And I don't like you.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda? Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
So in Sandrine's, we're watching Sandrine really throw it at the doctor, Doc Holliday. Yeah. And early on in the episode, when Kim enters, the doc is telling him what a hard time he's having with Sandrine. Sandrine lets go of the doctor and walks past Kim after kissing the doc and blows in his face. Did you notice this?
I did not notice that.
Judy Geeson makes a choice here into Kim in a way that is big fun and subtle, but hilarious in the moment. Like, that's not on the page. That's a choice.
Yeah.
And I love it.
She's making the case for getting to come back for subsequent episodes.
Yeah. So I'm making the owner operator of Sandrine's my drunk Shimoda. What about you, Ben?
I got to give it to Chakotay for that mug when it becomes clear that he's going to be teaming up with Neelix.
Yeah.
That was a laugh out loud take for me. And I loved it.
Really great.
Really great. Makes me hopeful for that character being more fun of a guy to hang with going forward.
You know, it's interesting. You spend a couple seasons just absolutely burying a character under shit. All it takes for redemption is a glance.
One little glance.
I'm a fan now, too. I like Chakotay again.
Yay.
Good stuff.
All right, buddy. Well, I got to fire up the game of buttholes. The Will of the Caretaker over at gach.biz/game. And I also got to tell you about Season 2, Episode 7, Parturition.
Patrician?
Parturition.
Partition?
Parturition. I believe that's like a medical term for making a baby.
Oh. That's good to know.
Yeah. Neelix and Paris must put aside their romantic rivalry over Kes after they crash land on a toxic planet. Wow.
That planet is
canceled. It is toxic. Planet is a toxic work environment.
Parturition, the action of giving birth to young. Childbirth.
Yeah.
Huh.
Parturition.
Why didn't they just call it baby?
That was the name of a very popular Justin Bieber song, and they didn't want it to get confused.
Baby. Baby. Huh.
All right, Adam. We are currently on square 96 on the game of buttholes.
I'm so nervous.
We will be deeply fucked if we hit that Mournhammered, which we could. We could also hit the nth degree via a space butthole that is right there on the board in front of us.
Both squares were equally unprepared for, I would say. I have no cold beer in the house.
Yeah.
And not enough beer for an nth degree episode that we would clearly use to do such an F. So
yeah,
please have a good lucky roll, Ben.
I always enjoy an nth degree episode. And I also really enjoy seeing people bellyache about an nth degree episode later.
Yeah.
That's always really fun.
Big fun.
But it does take a little prep, and I don't know if I have time, you know.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Oh God. I'm closing my eyes.
Here we go, Adam.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
Wow, I rolled a one.
Whoa.
We're on square 97 on the doorstep of that butthole.
God. How did I get so lucky?
Yeah, I think at this point, Adam, company policy, we both need to keep a cold six pack on hand
just
in the
case.
Fridge for the foreseeable future.
All right, I think that's a good policy. You never know.
You never know when a Morn Hammered may strike. Okay, but a regular old episode next week on The Greatest Generation.
What a relief.
You know what else is a relief, Adam, is every month at the beginning of the month when we get our wire transfer from the mothership over at MaximumFun.org of all of the contributions from listeners that keep our show afloat. People head to MaximumFun.org/join to become supporters of The Greatest Generation, to become the best friends of DeSoto.
The friends of DeSoto get what they pay for what they get.
Yeah.
And, makes this whole this thing show, possible.
Show would not exist without that support, and we really, really appreciate it.
Nope.
We also really appreciate the efforts of our buddy Adam Ragusea, who made the original theme music for our show, the Janeway song. He also made the Sisko song, and it was all inspired by the Picard song by Dark Materia.
His work woven into the fabric of The Greatest Generation, year mm-hmm. after year.
Much like a lattice pie crust that he might make on his successful YouTube cooking channel.
Much like a multi-layered lasagna. You'll have to call again. I'm just leaving. You got your Ben audio track. Well, you want to put uh-huh. down a little bit of red sauce in the pan yeah. first, and then you put down your Ben audio track.
Right. Maybe a little bechamel.
Maybe a little ricotta on top uh-huh. of that.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Then a little Adam Branica audio track. Uh-huh. Maybe some meat sauce.
Yes.
A little bit more bechamel. Some cheese.
Another Ragusea in there.
Yeah. It's just layer upon layer. You just start repeating those stacks.
Yeah. Cover it with some foil. Whack it in the oven for a while. Yeah. You want to finish under the broiler, Ben, because a little browned Benjamin R. Harrison and Adam Pranica track on top can be very tasty.
mm-hmm. We got to thank Bill Tilly, our social media guy, a great friend of the show.
The garlic bread of the show, Bill Tilly, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah. It wouldn't be the same without him. You'd be like, what gives? Why are you serving me this delicious lasagna with no garlic bread to go with?
I'm looking at all this leftover sauce. I need something to sop it up with. You're telling me I don't have a Bill Tilly to drag through the sauce? Give me a break.
Check out the Greatest Trek social media accounts, Twitter, Instagram, Twitch. Bill Tilly instrumental in the work on all of those.
Don't forget that Discord, man, drunkshimoda.com.
Yeah.
Where the Discord happens.
Yeah, there's Facebook groups and Reddit groups and all kinds of places to hang out with the friends of DeSoto online.
Yeah.
So do it.
Yeah, get some reps with some strangers before you go meet them in real life. That's what I suggest.
And with that, we'll be back at it next week with another great episode of Star Trek Voyager and an episode of The Greatest Generation that is trying to make the best of a toxic work environment.
Boy, speaking of red sauce, am I right? Make it so. Make it so.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.